If you were tuned into Coqueto's show last night, you may have heard us discussing adoption. It was the second part of a conversation from Coqueto's Cape Talk Dad segment, which had begun the week before. And our colleague Terence Mentor was sharing his experience as an adoptive father. Well, last night, Terence and his wife Julie were back on to talk about transracial adoption and how they deal with that as adoptive parents. Tonight, though, I want to hear the too often overlooked perspective of the adoptee in the adoption triad. And I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Paula Gruben to the show. Paula is an adult adoptee and the author of the autobiographical novel Umbilicus. Paula, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
Now, what an absolute pleasure, and it's so lovely to have you on. And thank you for staying up so late.
Pleasure.
So we're talking about adoption this evening, and yours is an autobiographical novel. It's called Umbilicus. First of all, tell me, why did you choose the autobiographical novel genre as opposed to just writing a straight memoir?
Well, initially it was a memoir, and that's how I pitched it to publishers in the beginning. And the feedback I got from the professionals in the industry was that, sadly, I was an unknown. I wasn't already a media personality or someone who was in the news. And that those were the memoirs that were published and bought by the public. For an unknown, it was easier for me, and it was suggested by them, that I fictionalized my story. So instead of going and changing the whole story, all I did was change the name of all the characters. Other than that, the story is exactly the same as it was before. So by changing the names, it went from a memoir to an autobiographical novel, which is fiction. The other thing was there were a couple of characters in the story who wanted their names changed for personal and professional reasons. And I did have to respect that. And I thought, you know, if I'm changing a few names, I may as well just change them all, keep it standardized. And yeah, I'm very happy with the result. It's worked out much better than I had hoped.
So Charlotte, the protagonist in the book, Charlotte is Paula.
Yes, exactly. Okay. I mean, you can just substitute the name.
Yeah, fantastic. So tell us, first of all, what made you want to write the book?
It's been a book that has been percolating in the back of my mind since the day I met my birth mom back in 1995 when I turned 21. I mean, I came home from that meeting with her that day and I scribbled down a whole bunch of notes of things that she had told me, things that I was scared I was going to forget. It's such an emotional day. And the amount of information that you get in that first meeting is quite overwhelming. So the journalist in me started scribbling down notes and things. And over the years, I added to that. And I had a box that I kept with a scrapbook that she had made for me, with a whole bunch of letters she had written to me during the years when she wasn't actually able to contact me, but she would write them and leave them on file.
Wow.
At the Child Welfare Agency in the hope that one day I would come and look for her and then, you know, be able to read her letters. Anyway, so this scrapbook and all my journaling and whatnot over the years, it culminated in, you know, I'm now ready to write this story. And there are very few books out there written by adoptees. Mm. There's a lot written by professionals.
Absolutely.
Psychologists and social workers and people who work in the field. A lot by adoptive parents, a few by birth parents, but I don't think enough by adoptees. And especially from a South African viewpoint.
Mm.
So my story is very localized. It's set in Durban, where I was born and I grew up. And so if you're reading it, you as a South African, you'll be able to relate to a lot of the South Africanisms and the locations and things like that. And it was time. that the story be told. And yeah, it couldn't have come at a better time. The market was ready for it. I've had such phenomenal response from everyone in the adoption triad, saying, you know, thank you for telling your story. And it's not just my story. I have to just explain quickly. I do tell the story from the viewpoint of all three parties in the triad, from my birth parents, my adoptive parents, and myself. So although I'm the protagonist in the story, I do offer a very, very comprehensive view from all three aspects, which is quite unusual. Most of these kind of books are written just from one perspective. Yeah, so that's how it came about.
Yeah, yeah. Why do you think it is that the voice of the adoptee, the adopted child, is so infrequently heard?
You know, there's a lot on the interwebs. People blog. There's a lot of forums, Facebook groups. People chat and stuff there, but not a lot of adoptees actually write their stories. And for some of them, their stories are not necessarily happy ones.
Yeah.
Reunions might not have gone according to plan. Mm. They might not have resolved issues within the adoptee's life. Mine was a very... ultimately a very inspiring story, and I think that's why it's been received so well. Although it's very dark in past, I mean, I went through huge challenges and trials and tribulations, but ultimately it ends on a very high note, and I think that's why it's been well received.
Yeah.
But the reason I think so many adoptees, you don't hear much from that side of the triad, is a lot of them are still grappling with issues, and they don't necessarily want to speak in public about these things that they go through, that for fear of hurting their adoptive parents.
Yeah.
For me, I had reached a point in my life where I had dealt with all my shit, and I just knew that what I had learnt along the way, it could be of such benefit and such help to other adoptees, knowing that, you know, you're not alone. There's nothing wrong with you. And there is help out there, and there's hope for healing as well.
Yeah.
And to let adoptive parents and birth parents know, you know, the amazing role that everyone plays in this triad. I mean, it's an incredibly complex, convoluted, complicated relationship. But you know, if you think about it, family these days, there's no such thing as, you know, like the happy little nuclear family. Families are complicated. And we've got to talk about these things and realize, you know, we're actually not that different from one another.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm talking to Paula Gruben, author of the autobiographical novel Umbilicus, which tells essentially Paula's own story about being an adoptee. I would love to hear from you if you are in any way connected to the adoption triad, even if you're not. Just share your thoughts with us this evening. The number to dial is 021-446-0567. You can SMS 31567 or drop me a WhatsApp on 072-5671-567. And I need to point out, this is a safe space. This is a very sensitive issues that we're dealing with. There's no need to give your real name, but we would love to hear from you this evening. Paula, you and I spoke earlier this evening, and I've known about you. We've recently become Facebook friends, and as a fellow adoptee, I immediately feel a kinship with you. I spoke to you earlier this evening, and I had to confess to you that I hadn't read your book. But the reason that I hadn't read your book, and you were so gracious in understanding why I hadn't, for a number of reasons. First of all, I've just finished writing my own experience in a book, and I didn't. Your book had been out for a while as I was in my writing process, and I didn't want to sort of be. I just wanted my authentic story to be my authentic story. I didn't want to think, oh, well, Paula's written this and I've missed this bit out. You know what I mean? Yeah, I wanted it to come very, very naturally. And the second reason is that our stories are in some ways similar in that we're both adoptees. We were both adopted as babies, etc. Your story has a happy ending when it comes to reunion with your biological parents. Mine could not be further from that. And it's a very, I just wasn't ready to read it, Paula. And I know that you understand. I know, and we spoke about this earlier, and I know that you understand that. And at some point, I will be ready to read it. But there are still so many issues for me that I'm still coming to terms with that are still quite raw. And we were speaking about that there's a fantastic, well, I think it's fantastic, a book called The Primal Wound, which talks about adoption from a very base level and the impact that it has. And it's essentially written from the point of view of an adopted child, of an adoptee. And I remember picking that book up about 10 years ago and reading the first two pages and just thinking, I'm not ready for this, because it verbalized very clearly feelings that I had not yet come to terms with. I hadn't recognized, and it was just too painful at that time. A few years down the line, I was able to pick it up and read it, and while it was a tough read for me, it was very important. And I'd like to recommend that to anyone involved in the adoption triad to read when you are ready. And so for me at the moment, reading adoption books, and yours comes highly, highly recommended. I'm just not ready, and I know that you get that.
I totally 100% get that. I mean, for me, literature, you know, reading about fellow adoptees' experiences was one of the most validating experiences for me. But it all had to happen in its own time. Like you say, you know, you can pick up something and it's way too close to home. You may still be going through those issues at the time. You've got to be ready and read it in your own time. And what I say to everyone who asks me who should read my book, I say everyone in the triad, not just fellow adoptees like you and I, but people, prospective adoptive parents who are going through the screening process. I had an email today from a granny whose daughter has just placed her baby for adoption, and they're busy drawing up or negotiating the post-adoption agreement. And, you know, how much contact should there be? How open should the communication be? Should there be letters, photos? Should there be visitation, et cetera, et cetera? So it's just post-adoption. And then for people down the line, adoptees, birth parents, wanting to understand that what they have done is an incredibly noble thing, to carry a child to term and to give that baby the opportunity of a life that you know you could not provide. I mean, it's one of the most, personally, I don't think I could ever do it, but I have so much respect for women who have done it.
Do you?
And they need to know that they've done a good thing. I think a lot of them carry a tremendous amount of guilt and shame, and it's something that they don't readily talk about. So I would like everyone to read my story. And, you know, adoption, it's not a once-off event.
No, it's not a once-off transaction.
Yeah, and, you know, it just goes off to its forever home and everyone lives happily ever after.
Yeah.
It is a lifelong journey for every single person in that triad. Mm. And there will be good times, there will be bad times, but that's life, and that's families. And we've got to work through these things within our own time. For example, one of my friends, I mean, who I've known since primary school, she read my book, and she was already in her 40s when the book was published, and she bought it and she read it, and only then was she ready to search for and make contact with, and then ultimately to meet her birth mom. Mm. So it took her 4 decades. I was ready from the age of 14 onwards.
Yeah.
And it was a very pressing issue for me, for reasons that you'll find out in the book. And I mean, I needed to find her and meet her. And I did so fairly young, at the age of 21, when I was legally allowed to do so. But some people, they wait until they're in their 50s, 60s, and some people never search for my brother, my younger brother. He felt no need to search for his biological family until he had three little boys of his own.
Exactly.
And his wife said to him, you know, I'd like to know a little bit more about the biology, the genetics.
Absolutely.
Our children, we don't know much about your side of the family. And so he was prompted in his very late 30s to search for and reunite with his birth mom. So it happens differently for everybody. We don't travel the same road.
Yeah. Can you tell us about some of the issues that you faced as an adoptee, particularly growing up, that you attribute to having been adopted?
Personally, I had a lot of identity issues. Mm. I was part of the closed adoption era, where my birth parents and my adoptive parents, they shared absolutely no information whatsoever. No names, no identifying details, nothing. It was a closed confidential contract. So for me growing up, all I knew was that I had been placed for adoption by a young couple who were going through a divorce, and that one was in a medical field like my one parent, the other one was in a creative field like my other parent, and that was it. That's all I had to go on. I didn't know whether I had any siblings. I didn't even know if my birth parents were still alive, nothing. So for me, it resulted in a huge identity crisis, just knowing nothing about my biology, my roots, my DNA, my genetic makeup. And I know for non-adoptees, this might seem, you know, like really, why is it so important? But it is important. You've got to know where you come from to know where you're going.
Yeah, absolutely.
And for me, once I had those answers, the only way I can explain it to you, it was like this huge gaping hole in my soul. It was filled up. And I could move forward with my life. And I think it's very, very important. I think the way that the whole, I don't want to say industry, because it sounds terrible, like a transaction.
No, exactly, but, yeah.
I mean,
exactly what you mean.
It is. And I think the gathering of information of a child's background, culture, biology, roots, all of that is imperative to that child's sense of wholeness growing up. Building life books with the child or for the child. And counseling and therapy, I never received any of that growing up. And I know it was a different era. You know, people are far more willing to say, you know, I have a problem with my teenager, that she needs to speak to someone. Mm. I can't handle this on my own. So for me, my issues were primarily identity-based. Mm. And also fear of being found out. You know, kids can be cruel, and they like to pick on somebody for being different in any way, whether you are a ginger kid or you are gay or whatever the case may be. And I just felt that being adopted, there was still a huge stigma around that status. And I didn't want to be found out. So I kind of felt like I was leading this double life.
Yeah.
I had this dual identity. I was one person on the outside pretending to belong to a biological family when on the inside, you know, I was someone very different.
Interesting.
So for me growing up, those were my issues, yeah.
Paula, you eventually did have a reunion with your biological mother. Can you briefly tell us how that went? What did you have expectations, and how did it go? And do you continue to have a relationship with her today?
A lot of people, you know, said to me, "What if it goes wrong? What if you find out things that you don't want to know?" Mm. For me, I would rather know the truth.
Absolutely, me
and,
too. Amen.
No, it doesn't matter how hard it is to deal with.
Yeah.
It's so much better than not knowing.
Oh, the not knowing,
so,
Paula.
Not knowing. It's terrible. It's the most hectic. Awful feeling.
Oh, I'm getting emotional. I'm getting quite emotional about it. It's the not knowing, hey?
It's not knowing. I mean, this is where the kinship lies. We will always have these feelings. So I literally, Doc Martens, I strode into child welfare. I was a very, very angry young person. I carried the weight of the world on my shoulders. So I marched in there. I demanded my file. They messed me around for about a month. And eventually she said to me, look, you know, we would like to mediate and, arrange the meeting here in our offices. And I just said, thanks, but no thanks. And I made a couple of phone calls back in the day when we still used our big fat telephone books. I just had a few names to go on, and it literally was two or three phone calls. And I spoke to first my birth father, because his surname wouldn't have changed, and it was quite an unusual surname. And then he put me in touch with her, and we had a chat on the phone, and we met the very next day.
Wow.
And it was like looking in a mirror. For the first time in my life, I actually looked like somebody. She was 2 decades older than me. She was tanned and blonde, where I was a little goth, pale, with long black hair.
Yeah.
But the similarities, and I mean, when my boyfriend met her, he's now my husband, so he's been through this whole thing with me. Mm. When he met her, he was shocked at the similarities, our mannerisms. Apparently, our voices, if you hear us from another room, you can't differentiate our voices.
Our
laughs are the same.
Yeah.
So it really was an amazing experience for me. I'm so glad that it turned out like that.
Yeah.
I met my birth father 2 years later when I returned from a stint in the UK. And it was the same thing. And he remarked on how much I reminded him of my birth mom at that age, which is when they had actually gotten divorced. And I met all my half siblings.
Did they know about you?
They were told literally when I made contact.
Yeah.
When my parents got divorced, they both then went and remarried and had children. But they were still quite young. So I was introduced as this kind of mysterious older sister, you know.
Yes, I do know. I know exactly. Yeah.
You know, both spouses had been told about me, so it wasn't a huge shock.
Mm.
And I've kind of assimilated myself into the family. I still have contact with everybody. And, I love my big, complicated family. It's awesome to have all these brothers and sisters and people
yes,
who just
true.
Love me and who never forgot about me. You know, that's one thing adoptees need to know, is that when they are given away or placed for adoption, it doesn't end there. Your parents will never forget about you. Whether the reunion is a good one or not remains to be seen, but you're always going to be a part of their lives. And, for me, thank goodness, it's been a happy ending.
Paula, I'm so thrilled, and I could talk to you rather self-indulgently for hours, and we will talk privately,
Sarah,
I'm sure.
I have to come to your book launch. You have to... Please
yes.
come up to Joburg and do a launch.
We are going to be coming to Joburg.
And we'll swap books and read one another's stories.
Yes.
And let's just keep the dialogue going.
Absolutely. And that's why I wanted to. That's why I wanted to get you on, Paula. I want this dialogue to be open, because it is so important. As I say, our stories are similar in terms of we were both adopted as babies. We were both, born in South Africa. And although I haven't read the book, but from what you've just said, things are a little bit different. And it's important to recognize that there are both sides. We've had some message in. Paula speaks beautifully on this. Regards from Nicole. Thank you, Nicole, for that message. I had another message in. I had a similar experience and I felt just as this lady is feeling. Wow. It's so nice to hear the happiness in her voice. And I have to say for me also as an adoptee, it's so wonderful to hear that there are stories that with reunions with birth parents that do work out beautifully, and I'm so happy for that. Paula Grubin, author of Umbilicus, please go and read the book if you are anywhere involved in the adoption triad. I really think it's worth it, and I think it's important that we have these discussions so that we can all have healthy, healing, and happy families. That's Paula Grubin, author of Umbilicus.